Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. Today we open our show with a warning for you about drugs laced with deadly fentanyl turning up on the streets in San Diego County, a combination that authorities warn is a recipe for death. Then from Public News Service, hear about a major push by California cities, including San Diego, to increase the use of electric vehicles. Plus, learn why you'll soon be getting a presidential alert on your cell phone as a test of a new National Wireless Emergency Alert Service. Hear about a local leadership forum coming up in Lemon Grove that's aimed at increasing diversity in agencies that make decisions impacting communities here in East County. The California Highway Patrol will be cracking down this week on local drivers who fail to stop for school buses when the lights are flashing. Public help is sought to repair damage by vandals at the historic train depot and locomotive in La Mesa. Poll workers are needed, the registrar says, for November's election, and we'll have information on how you can sign up on today's show. Our newsmaker interviews today are with two of the four candidates running for the La Mesa City Council, Councilman Bill Baber and challenger Dave Myers, a retired sheriff's commander. They'll be sharing their visions for La Mesa, and if you tune back in for our Friday show, we'll have the other two candidates, Councilman Guy McWhirter and Dr. Akilah Weber, on then. Later on today, from Public News Service, we'll have some top national news headlines, including the latest updates in that controversy over sexual assault allegations against Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh, whose accuser has now come forward publicly. Plus, we'll have some home safety tips for you at the close of today's show. So be sure to stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
This is Jonathan Getz with a warning about deadly drugs that have hit the streets here in San Diego County. Local law enforcement and county health officials are warning the public about several deaths connected to cocaine laced with fentanyl, a highly potent and often deadly narcotic that is 50 to 100 times more powerful than morphine, even in very small doses. This past weekend, three people died in Pacific Beach and Ocean Beach, and two others overdosed but survived. A Drug Enforcement Administration-led task force is investigating the recent deaths and says the danger of fentanyl-laced drugs goes beyond cocaine. According to DEA Special Agent Karen Flowers, the DEA has seized cocaine, methamphetamine, heroin, and counterfeit pills that look like real pharmaceutical tablets, all laced with deadly fentanyl. The tainted drugs are turning up throughout San Diego and Imperial counties. Agent Flowers warns that there are no tests available for the public to find out if a product contains fentanyl. She advises, don't let your loved ones find out the test results at the mortuary. District Attorney Summer Steffen confirms, we're seeing a dangerous trend of drug dealers and cartels cutting various drugs with fentanyl, and increasingly, it's a recipe for death. Deaths from fentanyl or fentanyl in combination with other drugs in San Diego County are spiking. 81 fatal overdoses were reported last year, over twice the number in 2016. County Medical Examiner Dr. Glenn Wagner says, we have seen a steady increase in fatal overdose cases over the years where fentanyl has been added to opiates. But now, we're seeing an emerging pattern of cases where fentanyl is unexpectedly added to other drug combinations. It's a new, deeply concerning trend, he adds. As little as 2 milligrams of fentanyl is a fatal dose for most people, and overdoses may require more doses of naloxone to reverse than for overdose of other drugs. County Public Health Officer Dr. Wilma Wooten says these cases show the deadly and unknown nature of drugs now being sold on the streets. She says, if you or someone you know is in need of drug treatment, please get help. The county offers several treatment programs. To get help, you can call the San Diego County Access and Crisis Line at 888-724-7240 or dial 211. Both these resources are available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
6 California cities plus LA County are moving forward with a nationwide plan to transition their fleets to zero-emission vehicles, an announcement made in conjunction with the Global Climate Action Summit in San Francisco. The Climate Mayors Group includes Berkeley, Chula Vista, Long Beach, San Diego, Santa Monica, and LA. Lauren Faber O'Connor, Chief Sustainability Officer with LA Mayor Eric Garcetti's office, says the city is making all of its expertise available in a new one-stop shop online portal at driveevfleets.org.
That means the cars themselves, the charging infrastructure, and all of the information and technical and planning resources that one needs in order to map out that transition for any fleet.
The climate mayors are pledging to fight climate change and improve air quality, and in so doing, meet the targets set by the Paris Agreement, despite the decision by the Trump administration to withdraw from the treaty. Helen Clarkson is CEO of the Climate Group, which is leading a larger global effort to eliminate tailpipe pollution and transition to clean electric vehicles. She says so far, 26 countries, regions, major cities, and businesses have committed to 100% zero-emission vehicles, and they represent a population of about 120 million people.
And when you aggregate that, put it all together, you really get a strong market signal to the automotive companies to say that this is what your customers want and to ask them to start signaling when they're going to start the end game of the combustion engine.
Clarkson notes that the initiative will lead to a large network of electric vehicle charging stations, which will encourage more consumers to start buying zero-emissions cars and trucks. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
A nationwide test of a new wireless emergency alert service will be conducted on October 3rd. So don't be alarmed if your cell phone makes a special tone and vibrates to get your attention with a presidential alert message. No, it's not a tweet rant from Donald Trump. It's actually a message sent by FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency. It was originally scheduled for September 20th, but the test has been rescheduled for October 3rd due to Hurricane Florence. You cannot opt out of receiving presidential alerts, a fact that has led some to raise concerns over potential for abuse by a president with a penchant for Twitter storms. But development of the system began under the Obama administration, and these alerts are meant only to be used to warn the public about dangerous weather or other emergencies that may require evacuation or protective actions. Wireless emergency alerts can be sent by the National Weather Service, by local first responder agencies, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, and the President through a system devised by FEMA and the Federal Communications Commissions, or FCC. FEMA will also run a test of the emergency alert system on TV and radio at the same time. To learn more about the wireless emergency alert system, you can visit ReadySanDiego.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Dozens of East County residents will be gathering in Lemon Grove on September 26th for a town hall discussion on barriers that exclude working people from joining agencies that make decisions impacting their lives. The event will be held Wednesday, September 26th from 6 to 8:30 p.m. at the Lemon Grove Community Center. It was prompted by the Community Representation Report from the Center on Policy Initiatives, which revealed East County as the largest geographic region in San Diego with a stark lack of diversity between decision makers on boards and commissions and community residents. At this event, which includes local political candidates and interfaith leaders, residents will learn why community representation matters in East County and how to take action. You can learn more at sandiegoleaders.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Jonathan Getz.
California Highway Patrol officers will be riding on school buses this Friday, September 21st, to catch drivers who fail to stop when a bus is flashing red lights or has a stop arm extended. The enforcement operation will take place in unincorporated areas of East County. Officers on board the buses will communicate with CHP patrol vehicles nearby, which will stop motorists who illegally pass school buses and issue traffic tickets or warnings. California law requires motorists in both directions to stop whenever a school bus has flashing red lights, even if it's on the other side of the street, unless you're on a highway with four lanes or more, or a highway with a center divide. Drivers must stay stopped until the flashing red lights are turned off, and motorists who don't stop could be fined up to $1,000. A survey by the California Department of Education, which included 137 school districts and 9 school bus companies, found that more than 26,000 motorists statewide failed to stop for a school bus that was stopped loading or unloading pupils. This enforcement action comes after the California Association of School Transportation Officials asked the Highway Patrol for help to protect the safety of children at school bus stops. The project is meant to educate and remind motorists, parents, and students of the importance of school bus pedestrian safety. Funding for the program was provided by a grant from the California Office of Traffic Safety through the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Public help is sought to repair damage by vandals to the historic La Mesa Depot and its locomotive. Built in 1894, the 124-year-old depot is California's oldest building in its original form, La Mesa Today reports. A meeting is planned on September 25th at 8 a.m. at the depot at the corner of Spring Street and La Mesa Boulevard. You're invited to come join efforts to raise funds to restore the depot, the last remaining station from the San Diego and Cuyamaco Railway. The depot is run by the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum. President Diana Hyatt and Donna Spevak, Administrator of Fund Development, will be on hand at the September 25th meet and greet, which will have coffee, tea, and refreshments on hand. At the meeting, you can learn about programs, volunteer opportunities, fundraising to restore the depot, and how you can help preserve this historic treasure. If you can't come to the meeting, but want to help, you can call 619-606-6231 or email the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum at fundraising@psrm.org. Reporting for East County Magazine in La Mesa, this is Jonathan Getz.
This is Miriam Raftery with a public service announcement from the San Diego County Registrar of Voters. Poll workers are needed for the November 6th election countywide, especially people who are bilingual in Spanish, Filipino, Vietnamese, Chinese, Arabic, or Korean. To become a poll worker, you must be a U.S. citizen and registered to vote in California, or lawfully admitted for permanent residence in the U.S. You'll also need transportation to an assigned polling location and internet access to take an online training and attend a 2-hour class in person. Poll workers receive a stipend ranging from $100 to $175, depending on the assignment, and bilingual poll workers get an additional $15 if they're assigned to provide language assistance to voters. Prospective poll workers can apply online at sdvote.com. For more information, you can call 858-565-5800.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. Today, my very special guest is Dave Myers. He served in the San Diego Sheriff's Department for 33 years as a deputy first and later a commander, managing 24 patrol stations and 1,500 employees before his recent retirement. He ran against Sheriff Bill Gore in the June primary with endorsement from the Democratic Party, and now he's running for La Mesa City Council in La Mesa, where he's lived for the last 25 years. Dave, welcome to the show.
Hi, Miriam. Thanks very much for having me today.
It's a pleasure to have you back, Dave. So tell us, why did you decide to run for the La Mesa City Council?
Sure. As a 25-year resident of the city of La Mesa and my recent retirement after many decades in the sheriff's department, I felt that I still had some service to give back, some government service to give back. And I think I have a lot to add when it comes to the city of La Mesa and the governance of the city.
Very good. Well, it sounds like you'd be able to put in full time on this if you retired.
So I am retired now. So yes, full time being in the community and talking to people door to door.
Very good. How has your experience in law enforcement prepared you to serve on a city council?
Now, very good question. So what I see is the number one priority in the La Mesa from the residents, and I've already heard from them, is public safety. And I think what I could bring is over 3 decades of experience from working in the trenches up to a command position, overseeing a budget, establishing priorities, and actually looking at public safety from the perspective of housing, from the perspective of whether it's the need for libraries or downtown business development. My over three decades of public service, I think I want to put to use when it comes to public safety in La Mesa and how that can weave into housing, affordable housing, the homeless issue, public safety surrounding what it means to have a library in downtown La Mesa. And so I see that as a benefit.
Very good. How would you address crime and reduce the crime rate in La Mesa?
So, very good question. I have a proven track record as a commander in charge of all the stations in the county of San Diego and how we reduce crime. And it's being smart on crime. There's a false narrative out there about we have to be tough on crime, we have to be soft on crime. I think what's missing is a conversation around being smart on crime, and I could bring that conversation to La Mesa.
Can you give us an example of being smart on crime?
Absolutely. So right now, what I've seen in La Mesa is I see a homeless issue that affects the library, a homeless issue that affects housing. Yet in the city of La Mesa, there are no direct services. The services for homeless are either in El Cajon or in downtown San Diego.
Right. There's no shelter here, for example.
There's no shelter in La Mesa. There's not even a facility to transition to housing, transition to, whether it's a bridge shelters, job training programs.
Are those things that you think are needed here? And do we have the budget for those?
I think those things are very much needed here. And I think I think the city of La Mesa has to budget for it. And in doing so, saves money at the other end when it comes to public safety, when it comes to using police services to continuously cite or arrest individuals simply because they're homeless, criminalizing it, spending public resources doing that instead of actually looking at incidents of crime like what happened at my house not too long ago.
Oh, you were a victim of a crime yourself.
Yeah, midday, during the day. So our garage is set back up a hill off the street. Garage was open for no longer than 2 to 3 hours. My partner was still home inside the house. We had a car in the driveway. Somebody walks up into the driveway and steals 3 triathlon bikes out of our garage.
Oh, very brazen. Yeah, it's definitely a problem. It sounds like you've got some ideas for addressing that. Housing is another issue that has been prominent in La Mesa recently. How would you balance the demand for more housing, especially more affordable housing, and I might add state mandates for that, versus those who are concerned about preserving the quality of neighborhoods, parking issues, height requirements, some of these other things?
Absolutely. And in downtown La Mesa, I've seen there are buildings down there, residential developments. Downtown La Mesa, there's an apartment complex, and I was there the other day, and it looked like it was 8 to 9 stories tall. Across from, I'd say, behind the Vons, right next to Mesa Boulevard.
Now, is that something, do you think that we need more things that height? Are there areas where height limits, should be lower, maybe near a historic district, for example?
Sure. So let me give you an example. So right now I've noticed that MTS has some, what I've seen to be underutilized parking lots around some of the facilities. If we were to do some development, 5-6-story developments over the parking lots, not eliminating the parking lots, but doing underground parking lots.
You're talking like down by Spring Street there where there's a trolley station?
Down by Spring Street, yes. And the example I use is another trolley stop, which is down along Fletcher Parkway.
Yeah.
Where you have development above and actually trolley parking underneath the facilities.
Makes sense.
You also have restaurant parking under the facilities where we could build density around public transportation. So the conversation about, well, we have to have so many parking stalls per unit, we don't. And especially in a corridor where it's near, let's say, San Diego State, where students could live there and simply hop on the trolley and get to school.
Yeah, that seems like it makes more sense instead of sticking it in the middle of a residential neighborhood someplace where it's not near transit.
Well, and I also use the example of University Avenue between 70th and, let's say, Park Drive.
Mm-hmm.
I was walking that 2 days ago. I've noticed that there's at least 17 vacant, dilapidated industrial buildings there. And if we were to do two or three story residential above with industrial, restaurants, shops below, that would make total sense in that type of a neighborhood where we could bring housing, where we could talk about where do we house our aged out youth from foster? Where do we house where do we house our, veterans? And create true affordable housing in a city where right now the housing, the affordable housing stock in La Mesa is 2% of what's available.
Yeah. Very, very serious problem there. Let's talk about the future of the La Mesa downtown village, which has had a lot of revitalization in the last couple of years, the downtown streetscape project. It's also had some controversy. Some of the merchants have, you know, had mixed feelings about the farmers market coming in on a Friday night, the future of Oktoberfest, who should pay for it. What are your views on those issues?
You know, and that's where the conversation of the elected officials has to be with the people that are most affected by it. You have to sit down and have a conversation with the business owners. You have to sit down and have a conversation with those that frequent these venues. And I see that if the downtown wants to continue to thrive and survive, then those conversations have to be the number one priority, including additional highlights that bring visitors to downtown La Mesa. If that downtown is reliant upon vehicle traffic, then we have to understand what that means and how to get people there. But when we have a public transportation, a bus and trolley, which is right there in downtown La Mesa, how can we better utilize that to get visitors in, create opportunity?
What about the La Mesa Library? You alluded to that. For listeners that may not be familiar, some years ago when the current library was built, it was really supposed to be just an interim facility while they were shuffling around building other new public buildings, and there was supposed to be a much larger, nicer, modernized facility built, and that never happened. What are your views on that?
The way I see it, I grew up frequenting a library, the Benjamin Library in Alley Gardens. A library, I think, defines a community and its values.
Yeah.
And right now, my many, many visits to the current library, it's too small. All of the internet stations have been occupied every time I've been in there. The small desks that surround the bookshelves on the outer part of the library on the inside have all been utilized. The kids area, there are kids in there all the time. So the library is being used. So we need to build a library to expectations. And when we don't do that, then we get what we see here. But when we don't address the homelessness issue and they see that as a location where they can go and use facilities, then we have an incident where even like in downtown San Diego, where there's no restrooms.
Right.
And there was a scare of hepatitis and all the individuals inside the library had to get hepatitis shots. And
yeah, it becomes a public health crisis.
And we can't address issues and needs in a city in a silo. We have to look at the broader perspective of homelessness issue, housing, needs of a library, a thriving, surviving downtown district.
Okay, thank you very much for that. I would like to ask your views on marijuana, both recreational and medicinal. Obviously, La Mesa voters a few years ago passed an initiative to legalize medical marijuana. The first of those dispensaries are going through the approval process now. The city is being sued because of a controversy over the siting of one of them. And in addition, I understand there's a movement afoot to possibly legalize recreational marijuana in La Mesa. What are your views on these things?
Sure. So the Measure U and any other measure that comes forward for medicinal recreation regulation in the city of La Mesa is simply put forward to regulate it right now, because in California it is legal, both recreation and medicinal, but it needs to be regulated, and the measures.
Yeah. Well, in each city, the state did give each city and jurisdiction the right to decide on its own while you're allowed to, you know, to smoke it at home or have six plants.
Right.
Selling it or growing it commercially are things that cities are allowed to regulate and either choose to allow it or not allow it.
Correct. And, you know, from my many, many decades in law enforcement, and I talked about this during the sheriff's race, which is It's been voted on. There's a demand. We have to respect the voters, and we have to create safe access, because governmental entities that do not create safe access, both for recreation and medicinal, are actually contributing to increase crime rates and creating fear in communities, because then what occurs, because there's a demand, is you get these illegal dispensaries that pop up that are not regulated, that do not create safe access or a safe product for the end users.
So in your experience at the Sheriff's Department, how did these illegal operations that, you know, I think we all know can sell dangerous products that's shady, how does that compare to places where they have chosen to legalize it and put in legal regulated dispensaries, either medicinal or recreational?
So, I mean, it's a contrast in community safety. You have a community that has recognized the needs, has recognized the demand, and creates that safe access and realizes that revenue. And then you have communities that don't. And in the ones that don't, you see a demand for increased services to the illegal pop-up dispensaries, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Illegal activities that take place in there that may have nothing to do with cannabis, where they may sell illegal other illegal drugs. And so it's a complete contrast in what the expectations of a governmental agency from the citizens should be doing, which is to create that safe access.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and what I see occurring in La Mesa is, quite frankly, a dragging of their feet. Again, wasting governmental resources, fighting a lawsuit, and without Measure U, without measure, any other measure for medicinal or recreation, the city can actually create safe access now as a council.
That's true. They could if they choose to. Would you impose certain limits on where marijuana dispensaries could be situated within the city if it were to be legalized by the council or by an initiative?
Oh, absolutely. Just like any other business, whether it's a auto wrecking yard or whether it's an auto repair shop or whether it's a liquor store, there's certain parts of neighborhoods, industrial areas, residential areas where you wouldn't want these businesses. The neighbors wouldn't want these businesses. I wouldn't want them around schools, churches, parks. But there's plenty of other areas. And I spoke about 17 vacant buildings along University Avenue.
There you go.
Which would be a perfect place.
Okay. Dave, who are some of your key endorsers so far?
So San Diego County Democratic Party has endorsed our race. We're endorsed by the La Mesa Foothills Democratic Club and Colin Parent, who is the current city council member in La Mesa.
You mentioned before we went on the air that you also had some ideas on improving infrastructure in La Mesa. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so I've been on a due diligence walk in the business districts in La Mesa. And the other day I encountered a member of the community, a senior member of the community, probably a woman in her 80s, living in a senior community in La Mesa. And part of the street she was walking on from the grocery store with her hands full of grocery had sidewalks, and the other half did not. So she was literally forced to walk in the street.
Very dangerous.
So walking in the street, it's trash day, so the trash cans are out, and now she's forced to walk farther into the street. A car approaches, she has to actually stop her movement, move in behind trash cans to safely move forward. And so to really take a look at the infrastructure within La Mesa, there's some neighborhoods that I would not advocate to have sidewalks, but there are some neighborhoods around schools, parks, senior communities, senior centers, where we need to prioritize the infrastructure, and I say sidewalks.
Okay, thank you. Listeners, if you just tuned in, we are speaking with Dave Myers, who is a retired sheriff commander running for the La Mesa City Council. Dave, what else would you like our listeners to know about your candidacy?
What I want the listeners to know is that I bring true accountability and transparency in governmental action. And it's not just words from Dave Myers. It's actually over 3.5 decades of proven governmental service, of working across party lines, of ensuring public safety, solution-driven, where we put the voice of the people first, as opposed to what we're seeing now in some local governments.
And how can people get more information about you and your candidacy?
You know, please visit my website at daveforlamesa.com. That's www.daveforlamesa.com.
Dave, I want to thank you so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the network for social justice.
Thank you for having me.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in La Mesa. We're here today to talk about the La Mesa City Council race, and you're going to be hearing from some candidates. And we're going to start off with Councilman Bill Baber, who's running for re-election. Bill is an attorney who was elected to the City Council in 2014, and before that, he served on the La Mesa Spring Valley School Board, including as president. He served on a school-city joint steering committee to help build a Boys and Girls Club for La Mesa. He has served as chair of the La Mesa Environmental Sustainability Commission, and he wrote La Mesa's Term Limits Ordinance. He has also represented the San Diego Taxpayers Association on some local school bond oversight committees. He's helped draft city charters and ethics ordinances for several cities in our region. He coordinated the City of San Diego's Rules Committee in the past, and he has served as an analyst for the Federal Election Commission in Washington, D.C., so a lot of governmental experiences there. Bill, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Miriam. Thank you for having me here.
So I always like to start by asking incumbents, what do you consider your most important accomplishments on the council?
I would say that the council functions now. We work as a team. We divide up the labor according to our expertise, and we like working together, and we're committed to helping the citizens. So it is a well-run council, and it's very citizen-driven, very citizen-oriented, and we have five public servants, and it's a lot easier to do the work when you have people who are willing to get out there and do the hard work. And we've got a great council right now.
Okay, that's great to hear. If you're reelected, what will your priorities be?
Well, number one is public safety. We have a very good police force, but recruiting, training, and retaining police officers is a challenge. It's a very difficult job right now for anyone to be a police officer. And so finding the best qualified candidates, paying them and training them and equipping them is a challenge. Our public safety is our number one priority. Nobody else cares what's going on in the city if they don't feel safe. We have a world-class fire department. They do a great job. They're part of the Heartland Fire Agency with Lemon Grove and El Cajon, and they're doing a great job also. And even our ambulance service, we have to make sure is efficient too. So public safety is the number one priority.
Okay, thank you very much. What do you consider to be the most pressing issues facing La Mesa for the future?
We have this great sort of dissonance or tension between growing and keeping our small town charm.
Yes.
Everyone loves La Mesa. They love the village. They like the neighborhoods. They love the history of it. But there's economic pressures to grow, to build new housing units, to expand roads. So we have to sort of grow while maintaining our small town charm. It can be done.
How do you balance the demand for more housing, especially affordable housing, as well as mandates actually coming down from the state, versus keeping that small town character and, making sure there aren't parking problems in neighborhoods nearby?
Well, we protect the residential areas as much as possible, and we cite the new development, the higher density development on transportation corridors. So in most cases, the two communities aren't so close that there's tension. In the few places where we do have some of that tension, we have to manage the parking problem. Parking is an issue, and we have to make sure that a new development that doesn't have a lot of parking spaces doesn't spill over to the residential.
What are your thoughts on height limits? So there was, I know in the past, some talk about building huge high rises next to downtown.
Generally in La Mesa, we're at a four-story limit. We've been able to manage that. It would be It would have to be a very unique circumstance that go much bigger than four. We're the jewels of the hills. We want to be able to see the hills. We don't want our view of the hills blocked.
Good point. Homelessness is a rising issue across East County, including in La Mesa, which currently does not have any shelters for the homeless. What more do you believe needs to be done to address that issue?
Homelessness is probably the most challenging issue I faced or any of us faced in the city council. It's multifaceted, and I wish there was a quick solution, but there isn't. So I'll take it into some component parts. We have a group of homelessness that, for lack of a better term, they're La Masons. They live here. They circulate in La Mesa. They don't leave. Those our police work with. They get to know. They get known by names. We try to connect them with services. We try and connect them with their families. And we do our best to manage those. The second group of homeless are sort of, for lack of a better term, nomadic. They're just moving through. And they're in La Mesa briefly, and they're moving on to other places. When you look at the problems that cause homelessness, you have some are economic, that if there was an opportunity to give them a place to live and an opportunity, they could work their way out of it.
Right.
You have drug and alcohol issues, which take a much more complicated recovery system. And then you have much more severe mental health circumstances. On the mental health side, the city of La Mesa is small. We don't have a mental health department. That's the county's job. They have the federal and state money on mental health. We really need the county to step in and manage the mental health related homelessness and probably some of the drug and alcohol one. Our police force does a good job, but when I talk to our line officer, they have to spend 20 to 25% of their time functioning as social workers dealing with homelessness, which is good. I'm glad and they care, but they need to do other things. We shouldn't have a police force of social workers. We should have a police force of police officers and have the county help us and the state and the federal government. We're doing our best, but we're a small city and homelessness is a regional problem.
What about the La Mesa Library? Some years ago, when a lot of the new buildings were built, there was a library built that was intended to be temporary, better than the old library, but still fairly small. And there was going to be a larger, newer, more state-of-the-art library built, but it hasn't happened. What are your views on that?
Well, I wasn't here during that period, but some of my friends of the library have told me the story. I can't make an excuse for anything that happened in the past.
Right.
I will neither condone or accept or excuse it. However, what can we do moving forward? We're trying to redevelop the Civic Center where we have our city building, where the library is, where the police station is. And in a perfect world, what I see is that we build a new public building that has programmable space for the library that the library can use. Do we need a new library for bookshelves? No. Most people will tell you need a new library for community space, for classes, for reading sessions with the children. So we need space.
It would have bookshelves though, correct? But in addition to all of these other new things.
Right. We need more community space. To be a healthy community, you need communal space.
True.
And so I foresee that we can develop a new building that would give the library much more programmable space and for other community groups too. The community center is not big enough. We need more community space. So that's what I see. A library is much more than books. A library is a communal gathering place, and we want to facilitate that.
Yeah. Now, all of those things take money. I understand that you are backing a ballot initiative coming up that would create an excise tax or business tax for marijuana businesses. Tell us a little bit about that and your views in general on marijuana.
Prop V, which is on the ballot, V for Victory, will allow the city of La Mesa to put an excise tax, a business tax, excuse me, on cannabis businesses that operate in the city of La Mesa. Our finance staff projects that will generate 1.5 to 2 million per year. And it is the opportunity for these cannabis businesses to pay their fair share. When Prop U, which was the medicinal initiative in 2016, there was no tax mechanism put in. So we've added the tax mechanism, and we need the money because A, it takes resources to process cannabis businesses. Two, it'll help fund police and fire who have to manage some collateral issues related to these places. So
using some of that money for enforcement against the illegal dispensaries.
Yes. And that's the third thing is we need to get rid of the illegal ones. And so the money we generate from the legal ones will help us do that.
Now, currently medical marijuana dispensaries are legal in La Mesa.
Correct.
But the city has not authorized sales of recreational cannabis. Tell us your views on that.
We're working through an ordinance. We had a first draft of the ordinance a month or two ago, and we hope to have that done maybe first quarter of 2019 to have a regulatory framework to allow adult use, and to have that adult use will be covered by the tax.
And listeners, we're going to have an article up on that on our site at eastcountymagazine.org. You can click in our La Mesa section and you can learn a lot more about the cannabis ordinance and the cannabis tax measure that's going to be on the ballot. And just to clarify, that is a business tax. It's not a tax, a sales tax that would affect the consumer.
Correct.
What about the future of the downtown district? You know, there's been a lot of improvements down there.
What we call the Village?
Right.
Yeah, it's been great. Have you been to it? Do you like it?
I have. The streetscapes, the Restaurant Row is very exciting. On the downside, there's been some people who complained about the farmer's market on a Friday. Some of the businesses didn't like that. And, you know, there's always the ongoing controversy about who should pay for Oktoberfest. Should it be the merchants? Should it be the city? That's gone back and forth like a ping pong ball in recent years. Tell us your vision for
Nothing
downtown.
Nothing says La Mesa like a discussion about Oktoberfest. It is the epitome of a small town charm. Who should put on the beer festival? You know what that is? Does anything get more small town than that? The Village Merchants Association, the city delegates it to them,
right.
And we're hoping that they're going to do a good job. Oktoberfest seems to be doing well. The farmers market does well, but that's a private group that manages it. We, the city, we provide police services, we close the roads, we do some infrastructure, but it's a private entity that manages it. And both of those are important. The farmer's market getting good reviews. The Oktoberfest is an iconic part of La Mesa. For those of you who've been there, it's a challenge for everybody involved to put on this big party for all of our guests, but please come.
Yeah, I kind of laugh sometimes with La Mesa when the biggest issue is, you know, who's going to pay for Oktoberfest? Right. It's like Mayberry.
But every year I get to see you at Oktoberfest.
Well, that's true. I'm planning to be there again this year. Bill, who are your major endorsers so far, recognizing it's early in the campaign?
There's three I'm most proud to have. Number one is our mayor, Mark Rapostathis. He is probably the best small town mayor in California. He loves the city. He's spent his whole life there. He's beloved. Here's what's interesting about Mark. He's no party preference.
Yeah, he's a registered independent.
He's
now
a registered independent.
Republicans.
And in this election, neither the Republican Party nor the Democratic Party could field a challenger. Where else in California could somebody run for mayor and neither the Republicans or the Democrats can challenge him? That shows you Mark's popularity and
speaks highly for him. Yeah.
He's nonpartisan. He loves La Mesa. He and his family lived here. So I'm most proud about that.
Yeah, he's running unopposed.
He's running unopposed, and neither party could challenge him. Why? Mm-hmm. Because if you know La Mesa, you know Mark's the man. So I'm so happy to work with him. He runs a great meeting. Good mayor.
Very good.
And I'm also endorsed by La Mesa Police Officers Association, La Mesa Firefighters. Why? Because as I said earlier, public safety is my number one.
Very good.
If you don't keep people safe, nothing else matters.
As we mentioned, you've chaired the city's Environmental Commission in the past, and recently during your tenure on the council, they finally passed a La Mesa Climate Action Plan. We should mention you're a registered Republican, and there's a lot of folks in the Republican Party who haven't been on board with addressing climate change. Can you share your views on that with us?
Well, that was quite a challenge getting that Climate Action Plan through, because the state of California mandates it, but they don't give you any money to do it. And
So it
a lot of research, and we had it was definitely a communal effort. Our staff did yeoman's work.
I mean, do you think it was a good thing?
Yes, I do. Our staff had to, working with Christine Alicio and I, Councilmember Alicio, we had to figure out how to get our GHG numbers down.
Greenhouse gas emissions.
I'm sorry. You get into this and you get
arcane
greenhouse gas emissions down. So the bulk of it has to come from where we draw our energy from. And we made the commitment to move towards 100% clean energy. That could come from a community choice aggregation system that we're looking at.
Which, again, for people who don't know, that's basically the city getting into the power purchasing business and essentially saying you would provide La Mesa residents with an alternative to SDG&E, something where all the power came somewhere.
Basically that, although it would still come through the SDG&E grid.
They're power lines, but the power could be produced by, say, by solar.
That's one viable option. Another viable option is that since the state mandates the climate action plan, the state will probably, if you look at the trend, basically mandate 100% renewable energy anyway. So we'll have no other choice. That's all you're going to be able to buy at some point.
Yeah, I was going to say, SDG&E is moving toward that. Right. Whether they wish to or not, I don't know, but they're definitely having to do it because of
legislation that, when we're taping, this is on the governor's desk.
And then the third alternative is that the power companies just, based on market forces or good citizenship, just do it anyway. So we think we're in harmony with that. So reducing your greenhouse gas emissions, the big chunk of it comes from where you buy your energy.
What do you think would happen with a community choice aggregate in terms of rates that ratepayers would pay? We always, everybody always gripes about high utility bills in our region. Do you think that they would go up, down, or stay the same?
You know, that's an interesting market choice. Would people pay more for 100% clean energy? Or would the markets just say, we're going to buy whatever is the least expensive? I don't know. We're studying that.
Yeah, or is there a way that you could bring it down? I've heard that some places it went down, some places it went up. And
I'm not an expert on that, but yeah. I can tell you that the city of La Mesa is not big enough to move the market by itself. But if we were in a consortium, say, with other cities in the county, including the city of San Diego, or if the state put a bigger consortium together, we might be able to aggregate the buying power. I'm not sure how that's going to work. Mm-hmm. The goal is good, that we can move to 100% clean energy. How we're going to get there are details we're going to have to work out.
Does your climate plan have other aspects, such as addressing greenhouse gas emissions from transportation, cars?
Yes, and it's interesting how they account for greenhouse gas emissions. So if somebody's driving on 8 from El Cajon to San Diego, we don't account for that. We can only account for if you start your trip in La Mesa or you end your trip in La Mesa. So we're trying to do things that get people to drive less. One way is as we build new housing, if it's on a transportation corridor, that people can take the trolley. The theory is, if you live in an apartment or a condo and it's right there on the trolley, you're not going to drive. So we get credit if we do transportation-oriented housing, right?
That makes sense.
I think the people who can work at home and as technology, you don't have to drive as much.
Yeah.
And, as many opportunities we can to get people walking, biking.
Speaking of walking and biking, I understand the new thing is these scooters that are popping up everywhere. But telling me before we went on the air about the latest problem in La Mesa is the scooter invasion. Tell us about that.
Yeah, the bird scooters have landed. They've just nested all over. And my neighborhood is where I live. It's just south of the village. And a bunch of these scooters were just dropped off in my neighbor's yards and into my neighbor's driveways.
Don't know about this, this is kind of one of these apps where you can call and say, I need a scooter, and you pick it up, but then they kind of dump it anywhere. And
well, it's part of the gig economy, which means it's in a unregulated zone that's very app-based. So
is this about to be regulated in La Mesa?
Well, after 3 days of hearing my neighbors complain about Bird just dropping the scooters everywhere, I did a memo to the council with my fellow council member, Guy McWhorter, to say, hey, we got to figure out how to regulate these.
Yeah, so not ban them, but just figure out what appropriate places where they could be picked up and dropped off.
And we're not the only city. I just saw the LA Times, that Los Angeles has to deal with it. Virtually every city has to deal with it. Mm-hmm. We want people to have opportunities to move around without vehicles. That's the goal. But you have to be a good neighbor. The incident that probably was best illustrates the conflict we have is that the folks put down the initial scooters, but they put them in a handicap ramp.
Oh, great.
And my neighbor said, hey, dude, don't put that there. Look, it's a handicap ramp. And the guy's looking at his app, says, well, I'm supposed to put it there.
Oh.
Like, can you see that's a handicap ramp? So that's just not being a good citizen.
No, it's not.
Or it's just being a knucklehead.
Yeah, exactly. This is just a matter of some appropriate regulation.
Yes, but it's a challenge when you're a small city because they just popped up, like 120 of them just popped up in one day and they just drove around and dropped them off. And it's
never a dull moment.
Never a dull moment in a small town. Small town politics is challenging because you're viscerally connected to the community. If there's a problem, they know where you live and they just knock on your door and say, what's up with those scooters, Bill?
What else would you like our listeners to know about you and your candidacy, Bill? And where can they find more about you?
You can go to my website, baberforlamesa.com. I would just like you to know that I am working every day for you. My wife and I raised our 4 children here. We love La Mesa. And there's a lot of work. People think politics is this glamorous thing. Are you kidding me? It is mind-numbing work most of the time.
Yes, it is.
And we do it because we love it. And, you know, when I see a pothole that someone complains to me about and I get it fixed, that makes my day. So there's a lot of work it does in La Mesa, and I'm trying to get it all done as best I can. But believe me, it isn't glamorous.
Listeners, if you just tuned in, we've been speaking with Councilman Bill Baber on the La Mesa City Council about his reelection campaign in November. Bill, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ.
Thank you.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast from Monday, September 17, 2018. I'm Mike Clifford. Nominee Brett Kavanaugh faces Me Too allegations. Also on the Monday rundown, warehousing wealth, philanthropy draws criticism, and LA's mayor pushing for nationwide conversion of city fleets to electric vehicles. Now our top story, Brett Kavanaugh and the Trump White House had prepared for a moment like this. That's the take from Politico. Long before Senator Dianne Feinstein referred a letter allegedly detailing a high school sexual assault to the FBI last week, and long before the accuser came forward Sunday, just days before a Senate committee vote, Politico reports Kavanaugh and his allies had been working to inoculate him against charges he might be hostile to women. The White House Sunday stood behind Kavanaugh's earlier statement that he categorically and unequivocally denied the assault allegation. Several Arkansas families are living without some of their loved ones this week. Stephanie Carson reports they face charges of immigration violations, that after a raid in a factory in Alma, Arkansas.
At least 28 people were taken into custody, but the women were later released. U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement served a warrant on the Bryant Preserving Company based on an undisclosed criminal investigation. Humberto Marquez with Arkansas United, an immigrant advocacy group, says it's left several families with a large gap.
The men are still currently detained, and they were taken to the Washington County Jail. A lot of those men are fathers, are husbands.
Currently, the detainees are only suspected of having an illegal immigration status. Earlier this year, ICE faced criticism for separating children from their parents, which Marquez says may be part of the reason why women were released. Bryant Preserving has insisted in public statements they are not part of an investigation. This is Stephanie Carson reporting.
The New York Times reports North Carolina confronted a spiraling statewide crisis Sunday as Tropical Depression Florence slowly ravaged the region, flooding cities, endangering communities from the coastline to the rugged mountains, requiring more than 1,000 rescues. The Times quotes Governor Roy Cooper as saying the storm has never been more dangerous than right now. Wherever you live in North Carolina, be alert for sudden flooding. Iowa is among 12 states targeted now for its panhandling ordinances by the National Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty and the ACLU.
Those organizations and more than a dozen others are demanding Iowa City's repeal laws that prohibit panhandlers from asking people on the street for money. The Iowa chapter identified ordinances in three cities, Council Bluffs, Des Moines, and Grimes. Philip Brown with the ACLU of Iowa says such laws essentially criminalize poverty.
These laws make it illegal to ask for help, and they are restrictions on any individual's free speech rights to go on a sidewalk and say what they would like to. They are restrictions based on what you're saying and based on where you are.
The National Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty is a Washington, D.C.-based nonprofit dedicated to eradicating homelessness.
After being refused the most up-to-date medical care for hepatitis C while incarcerated at the Buckingham Correctional Center, Elmo Augustus Reed is now receiving potentially life-saving treatment, that thanks to a recent lawsuit victory in court.
As many as 60% of people in Virginia's prisons suffer from the silent infection that attacks the liver, according to an estimate provided by medical authorities to the Virginia General Assembly. However, the best possible treatment is denied because of expenses that can run $20,000 to $50,000 for a single course of treatment. University of Virginia law professor George Rutherglen represents Reed and says the win can be pivotal on a national scale.
This case involved one prisoner, but it's part of a wave of litigation all around the country trying to expand the treatment for chronic hepatitis C.
Prison officials agreed to settle the case after their motion for summary judgment was denied. I'm Tramell Gomes.
And as GOP leaders work to pass Tax Reform 2.0, a tax break taken almost exclusively by the top 1% of earners, has come under increased scrutiny. Eric Galatis has our details.
Donor-advised funds are the fastest-growing recipients of charitable giving, up from $14 billion in 2012 to $23 billion in 2016. Josh Hoxie with the Institute for Policy Studies says because the funds technically never have to be distributed, DAFs are effectively warehousing the nation's charitable wealth. That's a problem, he says, because it prevents money from helping meet immediate needs at soup kitchens, homeless shelters, and other services.
The actual direct good of this charitable giving can take as long as the donor wants, which is not in the public interest.
And finally, Suzanne Potter reports six California cities plus L.A. County moving forward with a nationwide plan to transition their fleets to zero-emission vehicles.
The Climate Mayors Group includes Berkeley, Chula Vista, Long Beach, San Diego, Santa Monica, and L.A. Lauren Faber O'Connor, Chief Sustainability Officer with L.A. Mayor Eric Garcetti's office, says the city is making all of its expertise available in a new one-stop shop online portal at driveevfleets.org.
That means the cars themselves, the charging infrastructure, and all of the information and technical and planning resources that one needs in order to map out that transition for any fleet.
Advocates say the initiative will lead to a large network of electric vehicle charging stations, which will encourage more consumers to start buying zero-emission cars and trucks. I'm Mike Clifford. Thanks for starting your week. News and Cruisin' with Public News Service. We are member and listener supported, and we are online at publicnewsservice.org.
This is Ed Barena for East County Magazine and KNSJ with some important safety tips. On average, 20,000 deaths and 21 million medical visits occur annually, Fire Chief Sam DiGiovanna reminds us. Firefighters and paramedics respond to thousands of accidents every day, he says. Chief DiGiovanna, author of the Chief's Corner column on East County Magazine, offers these tips to help prevent accidents in your home. In the bathroom, cleaners should be locked away, out of the reach of children. Medications, scissors, razor blades, and cleaning supplies should be kept in a locked cabinet or out of the reach of children and pets. Non-skid stickers in the tub and shower can prevent slips and falls. Children should not be left unattended in or around the pool. Pool areas should be fenced in with a gate secured with a child-proof safety lock or latch. Electrical safety. Children can stick objects in open sockets and get hurt. Unused electrical outlets must have safety plugs to prevent accidental electrocution from foreign objects being put in the socket. Every home should have a fire extinguisher. Smoke and carbon monoxide detectors should be on each floor of the home and tested monthly. Batteries should be changed at least every 6 months or as necessary. A working fire extinguisher must be accessible. Keep paper towels, plastic plates, plastic utensils, and anything other than cooking equipment away from the stove. These items can easily start a fire if left too close to the range. Keep pesticides and cleaners away from children. Store chemicals in a locked cabinet or keep on a high shelf that children cannot reach. Do not spray bug spray or pesticides near a child's toys, since toys tend to go into a child's mouth. In addition, never leave household chemicals unattended. Unfortunately, small children may try to open the products and drink the contents.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.